Chapter 12, January 1818. The new day was still some time off when Segundus woke, the dawn even further. There was a chill to the air, but behind the bed curtains and beneath the blankets it was not enough to bother him, not with the solid warmth of Childermas pressed against his back. It was Childermas who had woken him, or rather, coaxed him to one side of the line of wakefulness he had been treading, coaxed with soft breath against his neck and gentle, wandering hands. Segundus smiled as he stretched a little, arching into those touches, pushing deliberately back against the hard line of Childermas's cock, and enjoying the quiet laugh Childermas puffed against his skin as he felt him wake. Segundus was growing used to mornings like this, looking forward to them almost as keenly as he did the evenings that preceded them. Childermas would be leaving soon, taking up his travels once more, and Segundus was determined to make good use of the time they had. It appeared that Childermas was of a similar mind. Turning, he caught Childermas's lips in a drowsy kiss, finding his mouth in the dark with only a brief fumble against his cheek. A moment later, his hand found its way to Childermas's hair, and then they were kissing with a slow sort of urgency, like travelers keen to reach their destination, but determined to enjoy all the pleasures and views the journey offered. The chill bothered him less and less as Childermas pressed him back into the mattress, leaning the whole solid weight of his body into every inch of Segundus's. Segundus each moment flushing more deeply at the pleasure of it, of Childermas's mouth and hands and, oh, the slow push and drag of his hips, even with their nightshirts between them. The remnants of the spell for silence Segundus had cast earlier still clung to the room. He could feel it in the form of dried and wilting roses just holding on around the curtains, could just smell their dusty scent. It was too late to refresh it. The servants would be awake and busy soon, and the silence would become suspicious. But he could be quiet in these slow, easy, pre-dawn hours. He could be quiet as Childermas worked his way down, pulling the covers with him as he pushed Segundus's nightshirt up until his mouth met his hands and kept moving down until he reached his destination. He could keep himself to gasps and heavy breaths and murmured pleas, even as Childermas took him in his mouth, hot against the cold January air that made his exposed skin prickle with goose flesh. Even then, Childermas's hands and mouth wandered so often he did not have the chance to grow cold, rough palms smoothing over his thighs, fingers digging into his hips, dragging over his waist, that hot, wet mouth trailing to suck a vivid bruise by the side of his navel. Oh, that he might be left with a sign of this, some private proof, but always, always returning to swallow him deep. Childermas drank him down like a draught as he spent, hands twisting in the sheets and back arching as he gasped out Childermas's name, mixed seamlessly with oaths he never gave voice to outside this room, the sound swallowed up by darkness and dying roses. He was growing used to the taste of himself on Childermas's tongue, that fading note of his own pleasure as Childermas licked into his mouth and bit at his lip, but it always sparked like flint within him. As the drowsy haze of his release ebbed, he kissed back more strongly, feeling his way back to himself and to Childermas, turning his fingers to the worthwhile task of drawing the delightful noises from Childermas that, he was learning, he could tease out with judicious attention to his nipples. It seemed such a small thing, such a small act, to provoke such a reaction from Childermas, and Segundus wondered, in a dazed sort of way, if his own delight at the response would ever fade. When Childermas was groaning against his neck and cursing him under his breath, Segundus pushed him over and slipped down to press kisses to his stomach, his hips, his thighs, delighting in the sound of Childermas's groans at the feel of his morning rough cheeks. His own release was still singing in his veins, making him loose and untidy at his work, but Childermas did not seem to mind. Segundus could not see him in the darkness, but could feel his enjoyment in the clutch of his hands and the sound of his murmured curses. As Childermas gripped at his hair, breath heavy and catching in his throat, Segundus longed suddenly for the summer, for those bright early mornings. He thought of how Childermas must look now, thought of seeing him undone in something more than candlelight, how the pale pink dawn would look on his flushed cheeks. He groaned to think of it, felt the twitch of Childermas's hips at the sound. "John, John," Childermas urged or pleaded, his voice hoarse and cracking, and Segundus set himself to his task, welcomed the seizing of Childermas's breath in his lungs and the burst of him over his tongue. Childermas grasped for his hand in the dark, laced their fingers together, and held him tightly. Segundus waited there, rubbing circles on Childermas's hip with his thumb, until he felt his breathing return to normal. He worked his way back up slowly, tasting the parts of Childermas he could not see, feeling the shape of him, sharp hips, soft belly, raised ribs, with pleasure-sensitized lips, adding to his mental map. He looked at a nipple, lazy and flat-tongued, smiled against Childermas's skin at his grunt, moved up to kiss his forehead, his nose, his mouth. Their kisses were slow, their earlier urgency mellowed into long, melting meetings of lips and tongue. Segundus sprawled boneless on top of Childermas, their hands clasped together on the sheets. "Morning," Childermas murmured, a rumble so low in his chest it was almost inaudible. "Mm," Segundus replied, too intent on lavishing gentle bites on Childermas's lower lip to answer properly. He was just as articulate when Childermas disentangled their hands and brought his grip instead to Segundus's backside, squeezing the muscle, fingernails digging in unmistakably. "If we had more time," Childermas sighed, lips brushing Segundus's as he spoke. "If I did not have to sit opposite Mrs. Lennox at breakfast," Segundus murmured, and smiled to himself when Childermas made a sound somewhere between a laugh and a groan. He could see the glimmer of Childermas's eyes, feel the beat of his heart against his own chest. Raising himself, Segundus sat back on his heels, rocked back against Childermas's hips. Neither of them were likely to rise again so soon, but the punched-out sound of Childermas's breath and the clutch of his fingers told him his promise had been understood. With a quiet laugh, he let himself fall to the mattress at Childermas's side and turned to face him. "How will I think of anything else all day?" Childermas asked, his wicked grin clear in his voice. "I will have to give the ladies tours of the house while you teach," he said, teeth scraping at Segundus's neck, "and entertain them in the library," lips fastening at the sensitive spot between neck and shoulder where a bruise would not show. "And every time I close my eyes, I will see your face as you—" He sucked, strongly. Segundus groaned, a long, deep noise that Childermas had torn free from his very core. He was not sure if he could see the glint of teeth in the darkness as Childermas pulled back, or if he was just imagining it. "You will have to do no such thing," Segundus managed to say. He slipped his hand into Childermas's hair and pulled him in for a kiss, gentler than those before. It would have been chaste, almost, if Segundus's nightshirt had not been still rucked up around his waist, and if Childermas wasn't squeezing his rump in slow, deliberate motions. He laughed again, caught Childermas's hands in his own, and brought them between their chests. "They are my responsibility. You are here on your own business, and I would never presume for you to be under any obligation for any of my guests." He smiled, kissed the corner of Childermas's mouth. "Besides, I think they are most likely to spend the day in the parlor." Childermas hummed. "What do you think she wants?" "Oh, to see how her investment is maturing, I would imagine," Segundus sighed. "She did not specify in her letter. Perhaps a break from Bath? She has told me many times she has little interest in magic, so I doubt she will be scrutinizing the curriculum."
"A hell of a break from Bath, the North Riding in January," Childermas scoffed.
He was silent a moment. "She's shrewd," he added, in a voice that would have been dark had there not been a note of admiration in it. "Yes," Segundus smiled. "You like her. You would not have visited her in Bath otherwise."
"Perhaps I knew you were there. Perhaps I felt your magic from 20 miles off and raced to see you in your shirt sleeves."
Segundus sighed as he thought of that day, the heat of the sun, the lazy conversation, the world at an angle as he tried and failed to take his eyes from Childermas's long form stretched out beside him. He laughed and grasped at Childermas's forearm, as he had longed to then, felt it strong and warm under his grip.
"I was very glad that you turned up in yours," he said, his thumb rubbing gently at the crook of Childermas's elbow.
He pressed a kiss to Childermas's throat as he had longed to then, and another, until Childermas pulled him up to his mouth, his hand in Segundus's hair. Out in the hall, the clock chimed 6. Childermas sighed. Segundus pulled back and rested his forehead against Childermas's. Dawn was still nearly 2 hours away, and he could see nothing of Childermas, only feel his warmth and hear his steady breath. He pulled himself away and opened the bed curtains, gasping a little at the cold waiting outside, and fumbled with the tinderbox to light the candle. The roses were reduced to nothing but faint branches and scattered petals fading on the floor. When Segundus turned, he found Childermas watching him, the shadow of a frown wrinkling his brow. Segundus leaned forward to kiss the line between his eyes. Childermas huffed a quiet breath of a laugh, no more. He grasped Segundus's hand.
If you would like my help, you need only ask, Childemas said, his low voice barely audible. You're not alone with this.
Segundus smiled, glanced down to their joined hands on the sheets.
I know, he said. Thank you.
He leant down and kissed Childemas again, only briefly. Carefully, silently, Childemas stepped from the bed and padded across the floor towards the dressing room door, stopping to kiss Segundus one last time. It was slow and lingering, and Segundus held on, caressing his forearm in a hopeless attempt to keep him there, but they both knew there was a cold, well-made bed beyond that door that must be warmed and rumpled before the servant stirred. Childemas drew away, and Segundus watched him as well as he could in the small light of the candle as he stepped through that door and locked it behind him with a spell, shivering at the tingle of magic on his skin. Through the silence of the house, he heard the door at the other side of the dressing room lock, inhaled deeply the warm smoke of Childemas's magic as he stretched out on his bed, the scent of Childemas's body and magic both blending together around him. He raised his fingers to his lips, touching them where Childemas's kiss had been, and smiled. For some time, he lay still, listening to the house come awake around him. Muffled footsteps edged carefully along the corridors, fires were brought back to life, the scent of breakfast cooking wafted up to him. He surprised the maid, a new girl from the village, by being awake and standing by the dark window when she came to stoke the fire, wrapped in his dressing gown to counter the chill. The day would be a cold one. The last of the stars still hung in the sky as he dressed, bright pinpricks in the cloudless morning. The fires were blazing throughout the house, keeping the knife-sharp cold at bay and making the whole seem to glow. It would be a quiet morning, he knew, the students reluctant to wake in the darkness and still half asleep when they stumbled into the dining room, reviving little by little as they sipped their chocolate and ate their hot gruel. Soon enough, warmed through by the fire and Mrs. White's efforts, the room eased into gentle conversation, coaxed by Segundus's inquiries into how Mr. Levy had slept, he being the most alert of the young gentlemen. "And you, Mr. Childemas?" Levy asked, after he had reassured Segundus that he had indeed slept well. "Were you warm enough? It was a bitter night."
"Certainly," Childemas answered with a nod. "I find my bed here is warmer than any other, and I am always glad to return to it." He very casually avoided Segundus's eyes, and instead turned to ask James Littler about his uncle's studies.
Dawn crept through the windows as they ate, tightening her grasp on the curtains and stealing over the table until the sun was fully risen in a clear sky. She was not rosy-fingered, but bright and cool as she glinted off the thick, frost-crusted snow, setting the crisp air alight as the boys filed out of the dining room to their morning lessons. Segundus quickly became aware of a bottleneck in the hall as the boys paused at the foot of the stairs to bow their good mornings to Mrs. Lennox and Mrs. Blake, who were on their way to breakfast at a rather more civilized hour than the teachers and students, watching the small procession with a little bemusement. When he apologized that he could not keep them company over their breakfast, he was answered by laughs and explanations that they hardly expected him to alter the school's routine for their sake, and anyway, they were perfectly capable of amusing themselves. Mrs. Blake's smile and good humor were so genuine that Segundus felt no guilt in leaving his guests to fend for themselves. It was Thursday, which meant that Segundus taught the morning lessons and Mr. Purefoy the afternoon. The students were quiet and attentive as he spoke about the symbolism of plants and flowers, were studious as he set them to identifying various dried specimens. Lunch was a livelier affair than breakfast had been, joined as they were by the ladies. The students seemed at first wary of these important-looking persons, but the table soon fell to merriment as the meal was eaten and the adults made conversation. Segundus explained the position of the young masters, help in the classroom, they each having their own specialties, and supervision in the evenings, and they themselves benefited from the time to do their own research in the ever-growing library and to pick the brains of more experienced, if previously theoretical, magicians. The young gentlemen took great pleasure in describing their own particular interests, Hadley Bright winning the attention of the room as he explained the use of magicians in battle and described Mr. Strange's actions during Waterloo. After lunch, Segundus left the lessons in the capable hands of the young masters and accompanied Mrs. Lennox and Mrs. Blake on a walk around the grounds, the ladies keen to stretch their legs after their days of travel and intrepid enough not to mind the weather. The snow of the past few days still lay some inches thick on the ground, hardened to a crust by the morning's frost. The crack and crunch of it beneath his feet woke something in Segundus, brightened his mind, and straightened his spine along with a nip of the fresh air. The landscape glittered, clear and cold, the pale half-moon hanging above them as it followed the sun at its own slow pace. The world seemed empty, the chatter of the house far behind them, the moorland sheep long urged down into the lower pastures of the valley. The strange, haunting sound of the snipes over the moor made the horizon seem endless, the world stretched wide and clean around them. Segundus felt as bright as the untrod snow as they walked, discussing the business of the school with Mrs. Lennox all the while. She laughed at his stories of the small mischiefs the students thought up, listened to his wishes for the future of Staircross as a place where magicians could congregate and work together. The library was ever-growing, he pointed out, explained that in fact the books were one of the reasons the young masters had agreed to take on their positions. Childermas, Segundus said with a smile, was perhaps their greatest resource, as the best of the books were due to his help, and his long experience as a practical magician was not to be beaten anywhere in England. He is going hunting again next week, in fact, to Coventry, Segundus said, and felt a sharp twist somewhere in the region of his sternum. When Childermas had told him of this plan some days ago, Segundus had not expressed his disappointment. It was for magic's good that Childermas was going. It was selfishness that made him wish Childermas would stay, he knew, but also concern for Childermas's own comfort. It was, perhaps, possible to be both selfish and selfless at once. Their shared bed was, after all, warmer than either alone. But the business was greater than the both of them, and he turned his mind from the warmth of the shared bed he was only just growing used to as he explained Childermas's plans to the ladies. His arrangement with Mr. Murray to reprint any books of magic of good caliber, the originals to be passed to Staircross when the typesetting was done. It was an arrangement, Segundus explained, that benefited both magic generally and Staircross specifically. Privately, he wondered how much of the arrangement was an attempt by Childermas to atone for the books that were now lost to them, to redress the deficit his handiwork had left them. He had not spoken of his theory, doubted he would receive an honest answer if he did. If this was a work of redemption, it was not for redemption in the eyes of English magicians, or even Segundus. Childermas had always worked on a grander scale, he was beginning to realize, than just Norrell. He worked for the advancement of magic, and used whatever means he could. Whatever aim he was working towards now was not to ameliorate any perceived personal slights, but was to open up the scope of magic beyond one man, beyond one institution. On the rare occasions when Childermas gave voice to any part of his grander ambitions, such a light burned in his eye, such a passion gripped his voice, that Segundus was shaken by it, and wondered how he had come to be swept into the orbit of such a man. Today, however, out in the sharp, clean air of a moor rendered sparkling wide and blank with possibilities, he felt uplifted by the idea of such a grand purpose, invigorated at the thought of his small part in what the papers were starting to call the restoration of English magic. The days were lengthening, slowly but inexorably, and although he as yet little felt the change, it was enough to know it was coming, to be able to look forward to brightness. He drew in a deep breath of the cold, spangled air and smiled. He became aware of Mrs. Lennox watching him, a curious, amused look on her face. She smiled and turned to say something quietly to Mrs. Blake, something that didn't reach him, even through the still air, although he could hear the occasional peal of laughter from the direction of the house, even from here, and they walked on. Mrs. Lennox's aim for the walk seemed to be the high point of the moor, which, she said, provided a wonderful outlook over the valley, and which would be astounding on such a clear day as today. He was happy to take her direction, to enjoy her and Mrs. Blake's company. It was better discussing the business of the school out here, beneath the sky, his feet tramping down anxiety like snow. As they reached the peak, Segundus's breath caught. The world seemed swept away from him, a patchwork blanket of white work and lace cast over a sleep-rumpled bed. Every dip and rise in the world seemed highlighted, every hedgerow, and miles away, threading through the valley, was the sun-bright curve of the river, meandering its gentle way to the sea. Not a thing seemed to move. The world was held in the moment of taking a breath, its lungs full and vital yet still. Beside him, Mrs. Blake sighed, and everything else exhaled along with her. A raven clambered gracelessly along the bent, twisted bough of a squat moorland tree and flapped a light, cawing hoarsely. Mrs. Blake expressed her disappointment at having left her drawing case in a room. "It is too cold for that, my dear," Mrs. Lennox said, her smile audible. "You're trembling just standing here. You shall have to remember it, and render it from your imagination in the warmth of the parlor." "We had best be getting back," Segundus said, blinking the dazzle from his vision. "It is not the kind of day to linger outside, however beautiful it may be." He stepped towards the ladies and offered Mrs. Blake his arm. She was, indeed, shivering, but no more than he. "I thought you might like to look over some paperwork while there is still daylight." Mrs. Lennox agreed and walked on his other side back to Staircross, ignoring his offered arm with a laugh. Lengthening as the days might be, they were still short, and as the small party returned to the house, the sun was racing towards the western horizon, the windows catching the coral light in their panes and making the whole front glow cheerfully. The fire in the great hall was welcome as they stepped in, the parlor even more so. As the ladies warmed themselves by the fire, Segundus went to collect his papers from his study, and when he could not find them there, went to the library. There he found Childermas, sat by the window to catch the last of the light, the edges of him cast in that red glow. "Where's Vinculus?" Segundus asked, glancing around and seeing no one else in the room. From his seat, Childermas gave a scoffing laugh. "It was too cold for him today. He's gone to cozy up with Mrs. White." He glanced up from his reading and smiled at Segundus. "And cold it must be," he said, his smile curling, "red as your cheeks are after your walk." Segundus was able to do little more than smile in response, his breath caught in his chest, as it had looking over that endless landscape. Then he had thought he could see every leaf on every branch, miles away as they may be. Now he felt as though he could see each individual fleck of color in Childermas's eyes, in his hair. A shiver passed up his spine, and he heard the door shut firmly behind him, and then Childermas was standing, slow and easy as he unfolded himself from the window seat. He placed his hands, cool from sitting so far from the fire, on Segundus's hot cheeks, and looked at him steadily for some moments before leaning in and kissing him, firmly and deliberately. Segundus leaned into it, letting himself have this moment in the fading daylight, in the library as they were, letting his hands find their place on Childermas's sides. He said, as the clock chimed four from the mantelpiece, pulling back with a last nudge of Childermas's nose. "I must get back to the ladies." A kiss to the point of Childermas's chin, rough already with stubble. "I only came to collect some paperwork," he laughed, and Childermas kissed the corner of his smile before stepping away. Downstairs, a door opened and let out a high stream of children's voices. "Very well." There was a great air of ironic humor hanging about Childermas, and Segundus was rather amazed to find himself amused by it rather than irritated. He moved to the desk to collect the papers lying there, and paused as he reached the door. "I was thinking," he began, looking over his shoulder to see Childermas standing by the fire. "If Mrs. Lennox is returning to Bath next week, as she plans, you may be as well traveling with her as far as Coventry. It is on her route, and I have been telling her about your work. I am sure she would be interested to hear it better put than I could relate it." He left before Childermas could answer, and returned to the parlor, where he and Mrs. Lennox pored over the papers until the gong sounded for dinner. The meal was hearty and restorative, the students chattering excitedly about a myriad of subjects. Segundus found himself between Mrs. Lennox and Childermas, and enjoyed himself greatly watching their conversation. It was a little like watching a game of battledore, with their parrying of comments about certain London persons and establishments, questions about politics and business. It was all done in good spirits, and Segundus could see the sharp corner of Childermas's one-sided smile and the gleam in his eye as he found a good partner in Mrs. Lennox, who, for her part, was speaking quickly and decisively while smiling widely. Between Levy and Purefoy, Mrs. Blake was watching with equal amusement. Segundus caught her eye, she smiled and raised one pale brow, which made him laugh suddenly enough that the conversation happening across him was interrupted. It seemed that Mrs. Blake had been quite intrigued by the earlier discussion of Childermas's work, and took advantage of the break to ask more about the king's book and the traveling that was necessary to exhibit Vinculus so widely, which led Segundus on to discuss his hopes that Staircross might in time attract more grown-up magicians and become a center of sorts for research and discussion, or for the work of the king's letters if Childermas and Vinculus grew weary of all the travel. At this, Childermas laughed, and made a joke about Segundus wanting to keep the king's book to himself, at which Segundus frowned and began his favorite argument on the necessity of making such work accessible, and that he did not intend to hoard anything, which only made Childermas laugh again. He knew he was being teased, but let himself continue on his well-practiced speech, if only to see the fond amusement on Childermas's face. When the meal was done and the boys filed out to the library in the common room to work or play, each giving Mrs. Lennox and Mrs. Blake a solemn bow and wishing them good night, followed by the young masters, Mrs. Lennox sat back with a sigh and smiled at Segundus. "What a cheerful place this is!" She turned to Mrs. Blake. "Do you not agree, my dear?" "Oh," cried Mrs. Blake, "it is such a delight! I can barely recall it being the same dreary place we first met you, Mr. Segundus." She glanced over to Mrs. Lennox, who seemed to communicate something to her companion with a look. "Although I have seen only little of the renovations." She turned to Childermas with a smile. "I wonder if you might show me the classrooms, Mr. Childermas?" You spoke so highly of the teaching earlier that I would love to see where it is done. I'm sure a magical classroom is much different from my own schoolroom. Childemas acquiesced and offered his arm to guide the lady away, casting a curious look back over his shoulder at Segundus as he left the room. The sudden quiet of the room, until a moment ago so bustling and full of conversation, was strange, so Segundus cleared his throat. "Shall we retire to the parlor?" he asked. There was something determined in Mrs. Lennox's demeanor. "Excellent as these chairs are for dining, they are not very comfortable for conversation, and I have there an excellent brandy given by Lady Pole." "A marvelous idea, Mr. Segundus," she agreed, and he followed her to his feet. Mrs. Lennox did not feign any need for guidance around Staircross, and wound her way through the corridors with confidence, proclaiming how wonderful it was to see such life and bustle around the old place after it had lain empty for so many years. When they reached the parlor, she immediately spotted the drinks cabinet and poured them each a large glass of brandy. Segundus took the glass she offered him and waited for her to sit, in the strange position of trying to play host to the owner of his home. She made herself comfortable on the sofa, and Segundus settled in the high-backed armchair which was his habitual seat. He listened, smiling, as Mrs. Lennox spent some minutes exclaiming how delighted she was to see the school finally up and running, and how wonderfully he had dealt with the repairs and restorations of the old hall. "In fact," she said, "I barely recognize it as the same house Louisa and I visited 2 years ago. It feels more like the Staircross I knew as a child, and for that I am very grateful. I told you once it should be a happy place, and I cannot express how pleased I am that you are making it so." Mr. Segundus blushed. "None of it could have happened without your generosity, madam. It is all down to you." "Stuff and nonsense," Mrs. Lennox snorted. "Now, before I ban all talk of business for the evening, I have a request. I hope you will not take this as my wishing to interfere, but I would like to sit in on your lessons tomorrow. I'd like to have a little practical knowledge of how my investments operate, you see, even if I am not directly involved in the minutiae of their running." "Oh, of course," Segundus replied, knowing he would have been unable to refuse the request even had he wished to, Staircross being her property and, for now, funded entirely by her money. He knew the fees from the current students went a very small way to covering the initial outlay of the renovations. "I find it fascinating to see people at their work. It shines such a light on their character," Mrs. Lennox continued. "And although I would never dream of telling you how best to teach magic, knowing nothing of the subject as I do, I believe I went through enough governesses as a girl to be able to tell good teaching from bad." She laughed a little. "Not that I am expecting to see anything like the latter here, of course." Segundus laughed, and it only came out a little strained. "Now then, with that arranged, there shall be no more talk of business tonight. I should like to consider you a friend, Mr. Segundus, and not just a business partner." She was brisk, but smiling. "And thus I expect all the gossip required from friendship." So they spent some time discussing Mr. Honeyfoot's daughters. Segundus told her how Miss Catherine was now Mrs. Roberts, and how Miss Jane had seemed to make up her mind to put off marriage for a few more years to study magic, much to her mother's apparent exasperation. She says that there is too much of her father in her, but she says it fondly. Mrs. Lennox described some petty scandal which had shocked Bath, although the reasons why it was so shocking, she said, escaped her. She updated him on the doings of some mutual acquaintances and told him of her friends, who, "I really should introduce you to Mr. Segundus. I feel you would get along splendidly." He described the latest to-do at the York Society and how Dr. Foxcastle had become so angry he had gone entirely silent, something that not even ancient Mr. Aptree had ever witnessed. Mrs. Lennox laughed delightedly at this, having received many reports of the Society's doings and characters in Segundus's letters, and described an encounter with an old grump she and Mrs. Blake had on the journey to Staircross. "She complains that she is getting old, but I tell her what nonsense that is. You ought to have seen her in action, Mr. Segundus. Louisa, my dear," I told her when she'd seen the boar off, "you are quite as fit and fierce as the first we met. And indeed, you saw that yourself this afternoon, the intrepid adventuress hiking through snow and ice." With a small smile, she glanced to the small table where Mrs. Blake had settled earlier to put down her artistic impressions of the view. "How long have you been companions?" Segundus asked. He felt he was on the verge of understanding something about his patron. "Louisa has been with me these past, 20 years. She laughed a little, but more to herself than to Segundus. "Some of our friends joke that we have been together longer than either of us were with our husbands." To Segundus's senses, she did not seem particularly bothered by this. "We found early in our acquaintanceship that we were well suited." "That seems very fortuitous," he said with a smile. "There's something to be said for finding a firm friend in another so instantly." "Indeed," chuckled Mrs. Lennox. "But I gather that was not your experience with Mr. Childemas?"
Certainly not, Segundus laughed. He thought of the still hazy memories of his visit to the library at Hurtview, felt Childermas's piercing gaze on him, the peculiar intensity of his silence after the magic at the cathedral. He hides his particular charms well. Yet he has charmed you. It was a statement, but there was a different question in Mrs. Lennox's eyes when Segundus looked at her in surprise. His heart leapt into his throat, and his spine straightened like an iron poker. I do not know what you are implying. The words came out more curtly than he had meant them to, and he felt his defensiveness adding to his guilt. He should have known better than to become comfortable with his situation. Ruin had never been far around the corner from him. Mrs. Lennox looked at him for a moment with a curious expression. Come now, she sighed. Have I not said I consider you a friend? I'm sorry, he said, his mind reeling, but I do not know what you mean. Mrs. Lennox's posture relaxed, and she leaned toward him with a sigh. Mr. Segundus, you need not lie to me. It is more than my house that Louisa shares with me. Her gaze was firm, but there was kindness in the corners of her small smile. We are more alike than you think, John. I would have you be honest with me. Segundus was frozen, his knuckles wide around his glass of brandy, his jaw clamped shut. I must admit that it took a while, but Mr. Childermas has grown on me. He is clever, and despite appearances, excellent company. She paused, a silence engineered to make Segundus look at her. When he did, she placed a hand on top of his. I am glad you are happy, John. I had worried that your life at Staircross would be lonely. Her smile relaxed into something softer. It is a happy place, not meant for loneliness. How? He found he could not finish the question. Something sharp and hot had lodged in his throat. They had been so careful, he had thought. I happened to take a turn around the grounds when you visited Bath in the summer, and saw you both at the pond. Your familiarity was rather unmistakable to one used to looking for such things. Oh, but we were not. He cut himself off, thinking of that hot August day, the peace he had felt with Childermas so near, their feet touching beneath the cool surface of the water. He swallowed and felt his cheeks burn, although Mrs. Lennox seemed quite unperturbed. It is a more recent development than that. This made Mrs. Lennox sit up straight, her eyebrows moving up her forehead. Oh? That does surprise me. They sat in silence for a few minutes, Segundus willing the burning away from his face, and Mrs. Lennox smiling at him indulgently. I am not trying to embarrass you, Mr. Segundus. Her voice was more gentle than it had been, the teasing note gone, but he could barely hear her over the panic buzzing in his mind, swirling and dense as a swarm of bees. I only wish to present myself as your friend and ally in such matters. If you would like me to stand down, I understand, he said, looking at where his knuckles turned white as he clutched his glass. I could recommend a number of persons who would be excellent. John, be quiet. This, she said so sharply that he turned to look at her. I have said that I am your friend and ally. I would no sooner oust you from your position than burn Staircross to the ground. He swallowed the lump that was forming in his throat. I only wish to know the truth in order that I may protect you, not that I expect anything to ever come to light. You both seem to me incredibly discreet. She stared at him, with a twinkle of humor in her eyes, and the tension which had been building unbearably in his guts eased a little. Now, answer me honestly, and we'll be done with it. Do you love him? He swallowed, his cheeks burning so that he thought they must be glowing. It was not something he had yet articulated to Childermas, not something they had discussed, or Segundus couldn't help but think would ever discuss so openly. I do, he said, and bit his lip. He felt giddy saying it, even here. There, now we can be past it, and I can be prepared should anything come to light. Not, and I shall repeat myself to ensure that you are listening, Mr. Segundus, that I expect anything at all to reach me. Are we both satisfied? We are, Mrs. Lennox, Segundus answered with a smile, the tension inside him unspooling. Thank you. He could not find a way to finish the thought through all the gratitude and relief rushing inside him. Instead, he said again, thank you. Very good, she said curtly, and finished her glass. I shall rest easier tonight, knowing it is settled. Good night, Mr. Segundus. I look forward to seeing you at work tomorrow. He stood to sketch her an unsteady bow as she rose to leave. As the door shut behind her, he fell back into his chair and pressed his hands to his face, laughing.